Welcome to the Baked Potato Podcast.
I'm Perry.
And I'm Lindsay.
And today we're going to be talking about unconventional murderers.
So grab a pipe and let's get started. Before we get into our stories, I'm going to let you know a little bit about what we're smoking today. And normally we get our information from Leafly, but they actually don't have this strain, so I got it from allbud.com. And they say, Platinum Berry is a rare indica-dominant hybrid strain created through crossing the infamous Platinum OG Kush with the delicious DJ Short Blueberry strain. This powerhouse combination creates a deliciously addictive bud with fresh flavors and sizzling full-bodied effects. Platinum Blueberry has a flavor of fresh, sweet berries accented with a mouthful of herbal kush on each smooth exhale. The aroma is spicy and sweet with a ripe blueberry overtone accented by rich earth. Also called Platinum Blueberry, the high is definitely a one-hitter, sashing into your mind with a euphoric creative lift while pulling your body down into a deep sedation in just one go. As you fall deeper and deeper into a body high, you'll start to fade in and out of sleep without fully succumbing to its power.
Well, let's see if we can make it through this podcast then.
So we're going to have that, and then we will tell you about our unusual guys. We're back and we're baked. And I'm going to tell you about Gilbert Paul Jordan.
Okay.
Also known as the Boozing Barber.
Ooh.
Gilbert Paul Jordan was born December 12th, 1931 in Vancouver, British Columbia. Jordan refused to talk publicly about his childhood, so we don't really know that much other than his parents, Jack and Winifred, amicably divorced when he was little. He and his brother went to live with his dad, but they maintained a good relationship with his mom.
Hmm.
His brother described him as a, quote, peculiar and sometimes misunderstood, end quote, kid, but said their parents loved them. So there was no, he wasn't, like, abused as a kid. You know, right. He didn't have a hard upbringing other than his parents had, like, the best way you can have a divorce where they're, like, nice to each other.
Yeah, exactly. So. And I'm like, so no fucked up childhood to blame on his disorder or whatever.
Yeah, and his brother didn't grow up to be a serial killer.
Yeah.
So he started drinking alcohol as a teen. Like, I think it was, like, 13 is when he started drinking.
Wow.
And then by 16, he was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Neither of his parents drank. So we don't really know why he chose this vice so young. Because it's not like it was in the house.
That is weird.
Yeah, because his mom, like, his mom was against alcohol, so she would never have it in her house. And his dad just didn't drink.
Yeah. So how would he even get his hands on it at the age of 13?
Yeah, it would be, well, in the 40s, it was probably a lot easier.
Yeah. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. He got to the point where he was drinking more than 50 ounces of vodka daily.
Holy crap. That's insane.
Yeah. Like, he drank a lot. As he grew, he enjoyed the company and services of sex workers since he failed in the relationship department. And he does eventually have some serious, he has two more serious relationships, but for a long time he didn't have any kind of relationship with someone. His criminal record began in 1950 or 1952 when he was arrested for stealing a vehicle.
Hmm.
That was his first crime, which it's like, okay, at least that's not a violent crime.
Yeah. Petty crime, petty theft. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it got worse though. He continued breaking the law every chance he got, and he was convicted for a hit and run, heroin possession, drinking and driving, rape, indecent exposure, abduction, and sexual assault before he started his run as a serial killer. That was all before he started the killing.
Wow. That's a pretty lengthy record for, like, not even having killed anybody yet. Like,
yeah, and what had happened was there was multiple times where he kidnapped, like, indigenous children.
Oh, that's like, fucked up.
Yeah, he lived in Canada, and it was, like, First Nations children. He abducted them and sexually assaulted them. And that's what some of those charges were from, were the kids he stole, which is awful.
Did he serve any time for these crimes?
Yes.
Oh. Okay.
He did. Some of them. He was in and out of jail a lot, but he did get away with a lot, too. But those, all the ones I listed were the ones he was convicted for, so he was punished for those ones.
Okay.
But he obviously kept getting out of it.
Yeah.
So, in the spring of 1961, that's one of the times that was the first time he kidnapped an indigenous child, and that's when he was starting to escalate.
Oh, okay.
So, by 1965, switchboard operator Ivy Rose was found naked in a hotel room. She was dead with a blood alcohol level of 0.51. Which the, like, legal drunk is 0.08. So 0.51.
Oh my God.
Is a shit ton of alcohol in your system.
So did she die of alcohol poisoning? Is that what killed her? Oh my God.
She was with Gilbert the night before. And the first woman who died of alcohol poisoning while in his company. But he nor anybody else was ever charged in her death. Because they didn't think someone would purposely drink someone to death.
Right.
That's, you know, that's not something
that sounds insane.
Of. Yes. Yeah. So it was just like, oh, this was accidental. She drank herself to death. Even though she was with someone the night before. But it was just like, it was an accident and she drank herself to death. So that one's never had any charges with it. When he eventually did have a serious relationship, he didn't give up on his habit of sleeping with sex workers. So...
Here comes the chlamydia.
Yeah. He was with, her name was Renona.
Oh.
Yes. So he was with Renona and dating her and continued to sleep with sex workers and drink heavily. And then he married her in 1973, but was still committing sex crimes. So he was still, like... exposing himself and sexually assaulting people.
So this guy's married, he's having sex with prostitutes, and that he still feels the need to go and sexually assault people.
Yes.
Wow. That's fuck.
So one of those times, he tried to sexually assault a woman he gave a ride to after she ran out of gas. He pulled over and asked if she wanted to go for a drink. She refused, and then he exposed himself. And then, luckily someone outside the car saw what was happening and distracted him long enough for her to get away. So
Thank
that
goodness.
Was, one person who at least got away from him.
Yeah.
Another incident took place later that same year. Gilbert noticed a woman waiting for a taxi in the cold. He offered her a ride and she accepted. He said that he'd take her to her destination after he dropped off, like, his shopping at home. So he needed to drop that stuff off.
Yeah.
When they arrived, she helped him carry the stuff into his house, and he invited her in for a drink, and it was hot buttered rum, is what they had. And she accepted, and she passed out after she had more than one glass, but I don't know the exact amount. I just know it was more than one.
Yeah.
So she passed out after that.
Did he drug it, or did she just pass out because of the alcohol?
Just from the alcohol.
Oh, okay.
There was no additional drugs.
Okay.
When she woke up, Gilbert was standing in front of her with his pants at his ankles. Yeah. He asked if she'd like to have sex with him, and she refused. So then he proceeded to sexually assault her. And after it was over, she escaped when he was sleeping. I guess he fell asleep after, and that's when she was able to get away.
Oh my God.
But she went to the police. But he ultimately ended up serving no time for it. So this emboldened him because he's like, well, I can rape someone and not get punished for it.
Yeah.
I can get away with it.
So did his wife know that he raped somebody? Did his wife find out?
I don't know. She had to have.
Yeah, dude. You know, my guy was married.
Yeah.
And like...
He did
a
lot of shit.
For a long time. And, like, it just said, like, It just says he was married, and then it doesn't talk about his wife during his whole crimes until the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and so it's just, that's...
Yeah, it's weird when they have, like, families.
Right.
Or other try to have, like, a, quote, normal appearance.
Yeah.
While they're doing depraved things. His second wife knew about his crimes. I do know that.
Okay.
So I do know that she was aware. Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
But he was aggressive with his wife and, like, physically aggressive with her. And he had hospitalized her multiple times, but she wouldn't say how she got her injuries. So he was never, like, held accountable for any of that.
I fell down the stairs.
Yeah, that type. Yeah.
That's sad. That's horrible.
Yeah. So he had an issue with her staying at the hospital to be treated, which I don't get why, because he was a control freak. And he asked that she be released to him, but the doctors refused. They're like, no.
Yeah.
She needs to be treated. Why would we just give her to you?
Yeah.
While she was hospitalized one time, he started his 6-month sentence that he had to serve for a different sexual assault. So she was in the hospital and he started that sentence, but she did know about that then. So yeah, she was aware of his crimes. But they were still, but it seemed like she may have had kind of a battered wife complex going on.
Right.
Because she was a battered wife.
I was just about to say, it sounds like she had Stockholm syndrome or something.
Yeah, like, well, she, I don't know if she wanted to get away from him or not, but she was safe at the hospital and she was there a lot.
Yeah.
So, he wasn't allowed the hospital when Renona was admitted. Like, the doctors were like, oh, he's not even allowed up here.
Wow.
So she had multiple hospital stays, and the staff told Gilbert he's not allowed due to his behavior. He tried wearing a disguise to, quote, break her out of the hospital, but that failed. He's just dumb.
Yeah.
In October 1975, she finally gained the courage to leave him. She flew to California to get away from him, and he called in a bomb threat for her flight. So it got canceled.
Holy shit.
And she eventually did get out of there. So she left Canada and went to the States. But it's just, again, a control freak.
Yeah.
When she's trying to leave him and he's trying to prevent that.
Right, yeah.
Gilbert continued to be arrested and convicted of crimes, but always seemed to get out of it. So he felt invincible. Because he's like, I can just do what I want. And they don't punish me, or I go to jail for a few months and I'm out.
Yeah, I'm like, what's the...
Yeah, he's like, okay, I can do that.
4 months in jail ain't nothing, but raping a chick is a lifetime.
Yeah. In 1971, Dr. Tibor Bezzaretti diagnosed him with antisocial personality disorder, and which that means he's a sociopath. And the doctor, that doctor, defined it by, quote, a person whose conduct is maladjusted in terms of social behavior, disregard for the rights of others, which often results in unlawful activities, end quote. That was the way. And they, I believe one of the doctors that saw him was, said he was a psychopath, but if he's already diagnosed as a sociopath, I don't know. I guess you can be both, but we know for sure he was a sociopath.
So. Yeah.
This next story is really sad. He raped a woman in her 40s who had the mental capacities of a toddler.
Oh, God.
Or a child. It was a toddler, yeah. He found her leaving a hospital, and he convinced her he was a doctor, so she got in the car and went with him.
Oh, my God.
Luckily, he served 2 years in jail for this because it was rape, and it was also... something about, like, a crime against someone with diminished capabilities. Like, there was that charge in there, too.
Right, okay.
So, but it's
but still, 2 years is not that long of a time for that kind of a crime.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad he served time, but I mean, oh my God, that's not long enough. Yeah.
It's not enough at all.
They should have put him in a mental society when they declared him as a sociopath.
Yeah, and they didn't.
Yeah.
And there's no, it's not like he had any requirements with his paroles or probations or anytime he got out to be on medicine. He never had that requirement.
Yeah.
And because, he should have had some kind of requirement like that.
Yeah, but back then medicine was so crude. Yeah. You know, like.
Yeah, well, and this was in the 70s by now, so.
But still, even back then, the doctors thought it was okay for pregnant women to smoke, you know?
Yeah, like, that's true.
Everybody smoked, you know, yeah. Like, it was good for you, you yeah. know, like.
In 1979, he met 48-year-old Maria Elvira. She was from South America, originally, and she was in Canada on a visa when they met in 1979. And her visa expired, so she had to go back to South America.
Okay.
So they kept up a long-distance relationship, and they eventually got married by proxy in October 1983. So he was married again. This was his second wife. She knew he was a heavy drinker, but she didn't know how bad it was because she wasn't around him in person.
Right.
And again, who knows how many crimes he was committing, you know? Well, I know some of the crimes he was committing in this time.
Yeah.
But she didn't at that time. So she eventually was able to go back to Canada in 1984, and she had to take care of him drunk all the time. And she was like, this is not what I signed up for. So she was getting tired of taking care of him drunk.
Right. Yeah.
And then on top of that, in October 1984, he brought an indigenous girl back to their house with her and him both drunk. And he didn't tell his date that he was married. And when Maria was like, what's going on? He said, oh, that's my cleaning lady. Ignore her.
He said his wife was the cleaning lady?
Yes.
The fuck?
Yes.
Oh my God.
To his random date. And so the girl attacked Maria. Like, physically attacked his wife.
Oh my God.
Like, why are you freaking out? You're the cleaning lady. She attacked her. And so Maria had to hide in the bathroom. And while Maria was hiding in the bathroom, they went off to the bedroom. And then the next morning when the date was gone, Maria could come out of the bathroom.
Like, the story keeps getting worse and worse.
Yes.
Oh my God. That poor woman.
Yes. It was awful.
That's disgusting. That's horrible.
Yeah. So she filed for divorce shortly after that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Because she was like, no, not doing this. Gilbert got to the point where he had a ritual with his victims. Because this is going to be where he starts killing them after Ivy. The first one that we know, or that we know of, that he was around when she died.
Right.
He would find a woman, normally a First Nations or Indigenous person. Most of his females were from the Skid Row area of Vancouver's downtown east side. So it's like maybe not the best part of town. It's a lot of lower income areas.
Right.
And some, but not all of his victims were sex workers and or someone struggling with alcohol addiction or someone known as a heavy drinker. So it was really easy for the police to blame the victim.
Right.
So it would just be like, oh yeah, she just drank too much and killed herself over it.
She does this all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would drink with his lady of choice until she passed out. And then once she passed out, he would pour more alcohol down their throats unconscious until they died of alcohol poisoning.
Oh my God.
And to encourage some of them, he offered money. Like, he would say, like, I'll give you $20 if you finish the drink. I'll give you 10 more if you drink another. Like, trying to get them to drink as much as they could before they passed out on their own.
Right.
Before he shoved more down their throats.
How would he do it? Just, like, use, like, a funnel or something? Or do you know?
I think he just, like, opened them up and poured the glass down.
Oh, my God. I didn't know that was possible.
Yeah, I guess if you, or maybe like hold up your neck a little bit so it goes down, but he got it down their throats and he would kill them that way. I'm going to tell you about some of the women he was with at the times of their deaths and the ones that he's most likely responsible for, even though he wasn't prosecuted for all of these.
Okay.
So Mary Johnson was November 30th, 1980. She was found at the Almer Hotel, and her blood alcohol level was 0.34.
Dang. So, yeah. I mean, not as high, but still high.
Yeah.
That's, yeah, crazy high.
And then Barbara Paul was found at the Glenard Hotel September 11th, 1981. Her blood alcohol was 0.41.
Dang.
Yeah. After these women that he was with, he had taken them back to the hotel and drank with them and then got them to drink more until they died. But it was getting expensive to keep getting hotel rooms with his victims.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, and there were other women that he didn't kill, that he just got super, super drunk and passed out and left them.
Oh.
So he may have thought they were dead.
Okay.
But there were women who survived him.
I gotcha. Yeah.
I forgot to tell you this. One of the times he was in prison, he learned to be a barber. And so he did like an apprenticeship in prison and then got out and was able to work at a barber shop. So he started bringing his victims back to his own barber shop because it was cheaper. It was free there.
Yeah.
Mary Johns was someone he took back to his barber shop on July 30th, 1982, or it would have been the night before, so July 29th.
Right.
And then after she died, he called his lawyer and he said, oh, I woke up and my date from last night is, you know, she died. She's unconscious. The lawyer was like, well, okay, if it's an accident, call the police. You didn't do anything wrong.
Right.
Like, he's like, why are you calling me? You know?
Yeah.
After that, her blood alcohol level, because he called the police and they didn't look up his criminal record when he was the one reporting the body, because they were like, there's no reason to. So they didn't know that this was a multiple offender. So they had no idea his track record. They just thought this guy, his date drank too much and he had, you know, there was a horrible accident he woke up to.
So he didn't do this every time, just one time he called?
This is the one time he called. Because it was at his own barbershop.
Oh, right. So he had to. Yeah, so he had no choice. Right,
that's exactly why he called his lawyer. He's like, oh, shit, I did it here. Her blood alcohol level was 0.76.
OMFG.
Yeah. That was, because I know the one that was like 0.51, I think that was, you had to drink like something like 40 ounces of hard liquor to get that high. So for 0.76, you have to have so much liquor.
Yeah.
To get that high. And then on December 15th, 1984, he did the same thing with Patricia Thomas, and it was at his barbershop again, and the police still thought it was a fucking accident. Because they're like,
what?
Nobody would kill someone with alcohol. So twice. Why should we, why should we be suspicious? This guy just has bad luck.
Dude, you gotta stop bringing home drunk women that keep dying on you.
Exactly. So he continued, and her blood alcohol level was 0.51, which is still absurdly high.
Yeah.
Just not as high as, I think the 0.76 is the highest of his victims, if I remember correctly.
That's outrageous.
Oh, wait, I take it back. The next one's higher. Patricia Andrew was higher. She was found June 28th, 1985. Guess where her body was found?
In his barbershop?
Yes.
Please tell me this time he was convicted. Please. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
He was not.
Oh,
because,
my
again,
God.
They thought no one's going to kill women with alcohol. That's such a weird murder weapon.
So this is giving me anxiety. I'm like, when is he going to get caught?
And Patricia Andrew, her blood alcohol level was 0.79.
Fuck.
Yes, that's so high.
So she must have been drinking a lot before he even poured a lot down her throat.
Yeah.
You know, like, it sounds like those two women may have had a drinking problem themselves.
Which some of his victims did.
Yeah.
So they could drink a lot.
Yeah.
But that, even somebody, I doubt somebody who, even somebody who drinks a lot gets their blood alcohol level ever towards that. It's probably like,
oh no, yeah,
0.15 maybe, because that's more than twice drunk. Or
right.
Like maybe 0.2 for a heavy, heavy drinker.
Yeah.
But it would never be that high for just an
especially
accident.
Like, I just picture these women, they're indigenous, so I just assume they're kind of like on the scrawnier side, not on the healthier side, you know? So it's like, it seems like it didn't take that much to get them drunk anyways, you know?
Oh, yeah, like petite
Yeah, women. Women, you know? Like, yeah.
I thought you meant skinny. I'm like, why would indigenous women be skinny? But you meant petite, that's why.
Yeah.
She was, again, found in his barbershop, and they didn't. And I noticed he killed two Patricias and two Marys. Which was kind of weird. And then Vera Harry was found at the Clifton Hotel. He finally went away from his barbershop for this one. And it was November 19th, 1986. And for her, this is weird because I don't know. I don't think she could have died of alcohol poisoning. Her blood alcohol level was 0.04. But she still was one of the women who he had drank with the night before and was found dead the next morning. And they didn't have any physical injuries on their bodies. So I don't know how she died, because you would think alcohol poisoning would have to be higher than that.
Yeah.
Like, so I don't know how that
happened. Because I'm sure I've blown a 0.4 before. Yeah. You know, like.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't seem very high.
That's below the legal limit.
Exactly.
Like, you can drive with 0.04.
Yeah.
So, that's, yeah. On October 12th, 1987, Vanessa Lee Buckner was found, just like the others, naked in a hotel room after hanging out with Gilbert the night before. And after this, police finally began surveillance on him because they suspected him of foul play with, you know, all these women that were dead at his barber shop and women he hung out with that appeared dead the next morning. Like, oh, maybe he has something to do with this.
Yeah, let's maybe get a tail on this guy.
Yeah. Between October 12th and November 26th of 1987, police were watching him. And they rescued a total of 4 women from him that he was trying to get super drunk and kill. And he was finally arrested. And he was convicted of manslaughter, though. And it was for supplying an alcoholic with liquor, was what he was charged. Like, it was in his charge. But it was just manslaughter. Because his victim, Vanessa, had recently lost a baby. She lost custody of her baby because it was born with drugs in its system.
Oh, okay.
So there, it was, again, easier to blame her for her own death. Like, oh, you deserve this. So
yeah.
That. But he was sentenced to 15 years, and he only served 6. And then he was let out on parole. Probation, not parole.
That makes me want to vomit. That is so scary.
Yeah. Like, this guy, I mean, he's, if you put all the sentences together, he maybe served a total of 10 years for multiple rapes and murders.
So, like, we start in the 40s, right? And yeah. And now we're in the 80s, right?
Yes.
And he's been, like, raping and pillaging women in Canada this whole time.
Yeah.
And he only served a total of maybe altogether 10 years.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Yeah. He was arrested again in 2000, but he was acquitted of trying to kill another woman in the same way. So he was acquitted of those charges, which, again, he was like, I can keep doing this because I keep getting away with it. Because the courts kept ruling in his favor every time. So he wasn't serving. He would serve a little bit of time and then be out. And then finally, it got to a point where when he did get released one time, police issued a warning to the public about him. And the warning, I'm going to read that warning to you. Jordan Gilbert Paul, age 73 by this time.
Oh my God. He's got to be spry. I mean, like,
is the subject of this alert. Jordan is 175 centimeters, 5'9". And weighs 174 pounds or 79 kilograms. He is partially bald with gray hair and a gray goatee. He has blue eyes and wears glasses. Jordan is currently in the Victoria area but has no fixed address. Jordan has a significant criminal record, including manslaughter and sexual assault of a female, which in Canada at the time they were calling it indecent assault. Oh, so that's used interchangeably. He uses alcohol to lure his victims. Jordan's target group is adult females. Jordan is subject to court-ordering conditions, including abstaining absolutely from the consumption of alcohol. So he was not allowed to drink when he was released.
Yeah.
And he's not allowed to be in the company of any female person or persons in any place where alcohol is either being consumed or possessed by that person. So he's not allowed to be by alcohol or women and alcohol combined.
Okay, so he's not allowed to go to bars anymore.
Exactly.
Okay.
If you observe this subject in violation of any of the above conditions, call the Sanic Police Department at, and they had their number, or your local police agency, and then they have another number. But, so they did put out a warning, so at least where he was released, they're like, okay, this guy's not serving anymore, but he's still...
A psychopath.
Yeah.
A sociopath out there trying the serial... rape and
murder
everyone. People. Yeah. Well, I guess he didn't rape that much, but
he did.
I mean, oh, okay. So he would rape them after they killed him, or just
not with those. They were separate.
Yeah. Like oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. In his younger days.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He finally stopped his crimes in 2006 when, at the ripe old age of 75, he died of liver cirrhosis from a lifetime of drinking. But, yeah, he got to die peacefully at home of liver cirrhosis, which his victims never got that. So
that makes me want to vomit. That makes me want to angry cry and hit something.
Yeah. And he was the first Canadian known to use alcohol as a murder weapon. And really the only case I know about.
Yeah, I've never heard of anybody ever.
Like, that takes a special kind of fucked up.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, Why would you think of that?
Yeah.
Yeah. How would you even come up with that?
I guess it's like something you can get away with, obviously, because he did for so long.
Right.
Maybe that's why he was like, well, it's a perfect crime. I can blame it on them. They just drank too much and never woke up.
Right. And all these women, like, being, like you said, either indigenous or...
And they're more ignored by the police.
Yeah,
especially back then.
Right.
Because Canada, just like America... was horrible to the indigenous people at one point in history.
Yeah.
And there is still some of that bias that's carried over in the modern day or in when these were investigated too. So it's sad because that's who he targeted, was people who are like lesser seen. Like they're not going to investigate these as much because she was a sex worker or because she's a heavy drinker or because she lives in the poor part of town. Like,
yeah.
It's things like that that he was like, well, no one's going to care, so I can do it.
Yeah.
So, it's awful. I'm glad he's dead, though.
I thank God he died.
Yeah.
I mean, did he...
He was an old fucker.
Yeah, I know, like...
75.
I just... That's insane. Like,
yeah.
I can't believe that... I mean, so... But he... So, he eventually stopped, though, right? Like, he eventually stopped killing women? Like...
He stopped killing them, yes.
Because it seemed like there's a big lull, you know, from the 80s till the 2000s.
Yeah, there was, like... Yeah, there was, like, the end of the 80s, he was active, and then it wasn't until 2000, and then he did kill another woman, then that's when he was acquitted of.
Right.
And then he was in jail for something else, in and out, by 2005. Because 2005 is when he was released with the warning. And he was 73 by then.
Right.
So I don't know if he was still trying to lure women those last 2 years of his life or not. But, I mean, he was still committing crimes up to two years before he died.
Was this a good-looking fella?
No! Yeah, like his mugshot, it's gross. He's an old man with big Coke bottle glasses.
Ew.
Yeah, he's not good looking in the slightest, so it's, yeah.
I guess if you're an alcoholic, though, you'll do anything for a drink, like.
Yeah.
Which is so sad and so scary.
And that's why he targeted people who were, like, if they hadn't an issue with alcohol addiction, because it is easier to get them to drink.
Yeah.
And especially if on top of that, you're like, I'll pay you to drink. Then it's like, oh, so I'm doing what my body's telling me I need, and I'm going to get paid for it.
Right. Like, yeah.
So, it's sad.
Cha-ching!
Yeah. Like, I could do that, but, yeah.
Oh, my God. Sad. That is a sad story.
It's really sad. But he's dead.
Thank God.
Yeah. So, let's smoke a bowl.
Yes. I need
Cheer
one.
Up.
Yeah.
The strain we're going to have is Bonkers. So, I'm going to let you know what Leafly has to say about that.
Bonkers was created by crossing a lemon tree mother and a cookies and cream F2 father. The result is a fruity strain with a creamy lemon flavor profile that erupts from beautiful lime green buds. The experience makes for a smooth buzz that is toned down in intensity. If you're a fan of lemon packed strains, give this lemon cream dessert a try.
Hmm. I know, I'm excited now. I love lemon strains. That sounds really good. That's like my favorite terpene.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're going to have that, and then we will come back, and Perry's going to tell us about another super fucked up dude.
Very fucked up.
Yeah. So we will be right back.
We're back and we're baked. And I'm going to tell you about Peter Kürten, a German who was born into a poor, abusive family on May 26th, 1883. Both of his parents were alcoholics. Yeah, this is an old story. I'm taking us back.
Yeah.
both of his parents were alcoholics, and his dad beat his mother, like, often.
Oh.
And he cited that his dad would make them all stand at attention and make his mom strip down and have sex with him.
Oh!
In front of the children.
Oh, God.
Right?
That's so fucked up.
In 1897, his dad was arrested for the rape of his eldest sister. And at that point, his mother finally filed a separation order. And that's when they... And then she later remarried and moved to Dusseldorf.
Okay.
In 1888, Kürten attempted to drown one of his classmates.
Oh. How old was he? I guess what year was he born?
83.
So in 88. He would have been 5?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Right? Yeah.
At like 5?
Yeah.
Trying to drown someone. Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was like hit in the head, because that could have messed him up.
I don't know. Like if his father was abusive. Yeah, probably. You know, because I was reading about a different serial killer who, like, as a child had been, like, hit in the front and back of his head and his frontal lobe was, like, messed up and caused anger issues. And that's what caused him to, like, freak out and start killing people.
Because there's multiple, like, serial killers who have some kind of, like, head injury in childhood.
Right. And, yeah, if his dad is abusive, then, yeah, you're probably right. He probably could have got hit in the head. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. And it didn't say anything about it, but, yeah, it just said that he was abused. So, I mean, that would make sense, you know. In 1892, Kürten befriended a dog catcher. And this dog catcher would torture the animals he caught.
No.
Yeah. Mm. And then soon Kürten would join in on the torture. He didn't excel in school due to extreme physical abuse he endured. So, I mean, yeah, like, he probably was hit in the head, you know, like. He often ran away, living on the streets with criminals and social misfits. Kürten would later claim to have killed his first victims at the age of 9. One, the first kid, he pushed off a log raft, knowing that the kid couldn't swim, so he would drown. So the second kid jumps in to save the drowning kid, and Kürten held his head under the water, so he couldn't.
At the age of nine! Yeah, that's younger than my kid.
Right.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And he went on for quite some time as well. I don't think quite as long as your guy.
Yeah.
But he got a little girlfriend at the age of 13, and although she would let him fondle her, he refused to engage in sexual intercourse with her. Instead, he would have sex with animals.
No!
Right?
No!
And then
he started killing these animals while he was fucking them to achieve orgasm.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
And then, to top the cake, he attempted to rape the same sister his dad raped.
Oh my God.
Right?
Why?
So, this poor woman, like, not only was she raped by her father, then her brother tries to rape her.
Yeah.
Like, that's just...
it's disgusting.
Yeah. In 1897, Cureton left school and began an apprenticeship with a molder. But this only lasted a couple of years, and then he robbed the guy and ran away to
Koblenz,
maybe where Koblenz. He hooked up with a prostitute and started a relationship, citing that she would let him do any act of sexual perversion he wanted.
Oh.
So, I can't even imagine.
I had a question. What's a molder?
I don't know. I didn't look that up. I should have. But I'm guessing, like, kind of like a, I would assume some sort of, maybe like a sculptor? No, I mean.
I don't know. That's what I was trying to think. Like, what would a molder be?
I'm trying to think, you know, like, you call, sometimes you call moldering, you know, like, what, the mortal. Mortal and pestle? Is that just a different word?
Yeah, it's mortal.
Mortar, yeah. I'm sorry. Oh, man, I mispronounce and think so many words are different words on this show all the time. Yeah, so he was with this prostitute, but he eventually was caught for his theft crime of robbing the molder and was sentenced to 1 month in jail. Ooh. And he was, of course, released to revert to a life of petty crime. In 1900, he was sentenced to 4 years in prison for petty thefts and attempted murder, but it didn't say who he attempted to murder. It just said attempted murder.
Okay.
So
he tried to kill someone.
He tried to kill someone, and they got away from him.
Yeah.
In 1904, after being released, Cureton was drafted into the Imperial German Army.
Okay.
He didn't stay there long, though, and soon was back into committing, like, criminal activity, this time in the form of arson.
Oh, great.
He said fire starting sexually excited him, and he also did it in the hope someone might burn to death. Because he would, like... he mostly burnt down, like, old barns or, like, abandoned places. So, like, you know, like, tramps, hobos, you know, stayed in those places.
Yeah.
And so he did it in the hopes that he would kill one of those kinds of people.
That's sad.
Yeah. He was again caught and tried for desertion from the army and multiple counts of arson, robbery, and attempted robbery, and was imprisoned from 1905 to 1913. Okay. So 8 years?
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. Cureton told police tales of murder and attempted murder, but his first known to be, like, definitely, like, committed murder was on May 25th of 1913. So, like, probably just right after he got out of prison.
Yeah.
During a robbery at a tavern, he found a 9-year-old girl asleep in her bed.
No.
He strangled her, then slashed her throat, and then ejaculated on her. I know.
That's so sad.
Then the sicko, the next day, went down to the tavern across the street to listen to all the locals talk about the murder.
Oh, God.
So he could relive the... situation.
Yeah, the thrill of it.
For him. The murder he had committed. So
One thing we forgot was a trigger warning, because both of our stories have, like, a lot of rape and child murder.
Lots of rape, child murder.
Yeah.
Incest.
Yeah.
Bestiality.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We cover some heavy stuff here, people.
Yeah.
But that's what we like. That's what we're into, and that's what we hope that you're into also. So, cheers.
Yeah.
And obviously, you have to be or you wouldn't be here. So.
Why are you listening if you're not into the murder? Well, not into murder, but you know what I mean.
Oh.
True crime.
He would also visit the child's grave.
No.
Citing that just touching the soil of her grave, like, excited him enough sexually to make him ejaculate.
Gross.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's how fucked up this guy was. Like,
it's nasty.
Yeah. 2 months later, a similar situation occurred. He was robbing a house and found a 17-year-old girl who he strangled until he ejaculated, then left, believing the girl to be dead. Just days after the attempted murder, Curtin would be picked up for arson, attacks, and burglaries. He was sentenced 6 years, but was a bad prisoner and ended up serving an extra 2 years.
Well, hey,
so, I mean, so he's, again, in prison for another 8 years, but he just gets out and starts right back up again. Because in 1921, Curtin moved in with his sister. I'm guessing not the one
that he tried to rape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go ahead and safely assume that that woman would have nothing to do with him again.
Yeah.
And she had this friend who was a former prostitute, and Curtin and the prostitute would later marry. And upon her invitation, he would have sex with her, but only if she requested it.
Okay.
And he would have to fantasize about committing violent acts against others
to get
in
off.
Order to achieve ejaculation. Yeah.
Gross.
And this is whenever we really start rolling. Because in 1929, something snapped, and he just went ham. On February 3rd, 1929, Curtin stalked an elderly woman, waiting until she was out of sight from potential witnesses by a bush, and he jumped out and attacked her, stabbing her 24 times with a pair of scissors. It said that the scissors even went down to her bone.
Oh.
Can you imagine that?
Her poor
and
old
she
bones.
Survived.
Oh my God.
Can you believe that? Like,
jeez.
Yeah. On February 8th, Curtin strangled a 9-year-old girl before stabbing her, ejaculating, and then eventually setting her on fire.
Oh my
so
God.
Now he's doing all of the things that he loves to do.
Yeah, like, just all at once.
Exactly. He's just, yeah. like I said. Because
he got away with it before.
Yeah. You know, what's 8 years in prison? You know, like,
and that wasn't even for the murder.
Exactly. You know,
like,
so,
he didn't even get caught for that.
Yeah. On February 13th, Curtin murdered a 45-year-old mechanic, stabbing him 20 times.
Oh.
And despite the differences in ages and sexes, these three victims all died similarly enough that detectives concluded it was the same person committing the crimes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least we have that. So, I mean, at least police are kind of like, you know, catching on to the fact that there's a killer about.
Yeah. Unlike the guy's
unlike
my story.
Your guy. Yeah. Unlike your guy who the police were just like, nope, he sounds like a standard citizen to me.
Another dead body at the barbershop? Pillar of the community.
Yeah. And you know, I forgot to mention this when you were telling your story, but I think it's so funny that he was just a barber.
Right.
Because I feel like if he was, like, a lawyer or a doctor, of course, like, people would be like, no, no, you can do anything like that. But he was just a barber. So, like, I mean, I feel like people would be like, oh, yeah, like, this guy's capable of...
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Maybe that's me being a jobist.
Yeah. I used to be a barber.
I'm not saying that, you know, barbers kill people, but there is Sweeney Todd.
But I saw this documentary with a lot of thongs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
On August 11th of 1929, Cureton raped, strangled, and repeatedly stabbed a young woman. Uh-huh. Following this murder, he decided to switch from scissors to a knife to make police think that there was more than one murderer about.
Okay, so he switched it up to throw them off his trail.
A little bit.
Okay.
In the early morning of August 21st, he randomly stabbed, like, and this is what just kills me. He just goes out and just randomly starts stabbing, like, people.
Oh.
An 18-year-old girl, a 30-year-old man, and a 37-year-old woman.
Oh. He just randomly stabbed him when he was out?
Yeah, he was just randomly out stabbing people.
Did they survive?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he didn't get caught for it. They weren't ever, I don't know if they didn't go to the police. I don't know.
Yeah.
And on the evening of September 30th, Cureton met a 31-year-old servant girl. He hit her with a hammer.
Oh.
Before and after raping her.
Oh.
On October 11th, he met another servant girl in the same vein as before, struck her with a hammer and raped her.
Oh, that's so gross.
Yeah, it's extremely disturbing. A hammer, getting hit in the head with a hammer and being raped. Oh my God.
Getting raped with a head injury. That's,
I mean, getting raped is horrible, and then to get raped with a head injury is just...
Yeah. Just to be killed after.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to torture you a little bit, you know,
That's so sad.
On November 7th, Cureton encountered a 5-year-old girl who he grabbed by the throat and strangled, then stabbed 34 times.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, 5 years old,
I know. This story was really hard to write because of
you've got a baby
kids,
around
know?
That age.
Like, there's 6 and 8, so you know, like, it was 5 year and 9 year old, and so I was having a really hard time writing it and reading about it. I was just like, this guy is messed up.
Yeah, it is hard to do the research. That's like when we did Carla Homolka and Paul Bernardo.
Uh-huh.
That one was really hard to research.
Yeah.
Like, with, oh God. Because it had, like, a lot of, like, rape and just horrible, horrible details. Like, yeah. That one was so hard to research. I was like, I cannot read about this anymore.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. Your eyes, it's like, are my eyes going to start bleeding? What's happening to me?
Yeah.
By late summer of 29, the murderer in question had been dubbed the Vampire of Dusseldorf and was receiving national and international attention. Cureton would engage in non-fatal hammer attacks between February and May of 1930.
So, oh my God!
Not only was he going around stabbing people, but now he's going around hitting people on the head with hammers.
Oh my God.
Many of his victims survived and were able to describe the attacker to the police.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean,
they'd never be the same again.
Yeah, and they didn't catch him. Oh. You know, like, I mean, it wasn't... I mean, they were able to describe him, but they weren't able to, I mean, catch
find him.
Yeah. On May 14th of 1930, an unknown man tried to attack a 20-year-old girl. Get this. Cureton came to her rescue.
Why?
So he could take her back to his place. They drank and they ate and they hung out. And after expressing no desire to have sexual intercourse with him, he agreed to walk her back to her hostel.
Okay. So, you know, at this point, he's still an up-and-up guy, you know. Mm-hmm. But instead, he leads her into the woods, where he then raped her and attempted to strangle her to death. When she began to scream, he released her and allowed her to leave. She didn't report the crime to the police, but she wrote a letter of the encounter to a friend. And she addressed the letter wrong. And so I guess back then you could just like open people's mail and see who wrote the letter. I guess there weren't any laws about that back then because the post clerk opened the letter, read it, passed it on to the chief of police. The chief inspector didn't really think this was the call of the vampire of Dusseldorf, but, you know, he interviewed the girl anyways, you know, like, just to see what her statement was.
Yeah.
And the girl stated she had been released by Cureton because she swore that she couldn't remember where he lived. Like, she just swore up and down, like, she couldn't remember where he lived, like, he had just fucked her up so bad, like...
Yeah.
You know, and he just was, like, satisfied with that, so...
So he let her go.
Yeah, he let her go, but she remembered exactly where he lived, and, of course, led the police straight there. Cureton was not at home at the time, but came home and found the girl and the detective in the hallway, and since... You know, at that point, you know, he knew he was caught, you know, like, so he went and confessed to his wife that he had raped this girl. Ugh. And with all of his priors, if they caught him, he would get 15 years. And so his wife was like,
only 15 years
with all of his priors, too.
What right? the fuck?
That's yeah.
Just like my guy.
Exactly. Yeah. Like,
why?
And so his wife allowed him to relocate to a different city. But he didn't stay long. Okay, so yeah, so his wife let him escape prison, you know. And but he would soon return to confess that he was the vampire of Dusseldorf. Then he encouraged his wife to turn him in and collect the reward. So his wife did, stating to police that she knew about his previous crimes, but never thought he could be capable of the Dusseldorf murders. That afternoon, Cureton was arrested at gunpoint. He then gave a full confession. On April 13th, 1931, Cureton stood trial. He was charged...
My guy was born in 1931.
That's crazy. That's so funny. Yeah. That's weird. Like, maybe this guy died
and his, was reincarnated as this little fucker.
Yeah. But
sorry, go on.
No, it's fine. Like, I was just going to say he was charged with 9 counts of murder and 7 counts of attempted murder. And the trial only lasted 10 days, and on April 22nd, Cureton was found guilty and sentenced to death. On July 2nd, Cureton was executed by the guillotine.
Ooh.
And is he the one whose head's in the museum? I don't know. They didn't say anything about that. Is he? I don't know. Is there a guy's... What?
There's one of the serial killers that's older, or is that Carl Panzerheim? Who is that? One of the serial killers... His, like, head is preserved in a museum. It's, like, split down the middle, and you can see in it.
Oh, to show his, like, fucked up brain? Or
yeah,
what?
Well, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But he's just, like, preserved. They studied his brain, but...
Who was that? I don't know. I thought it was Peter Kern. Google that. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't read anything about that, like...
Okay. I thought that's what you were gonna say.
Yeah, no, like, I was just gonna say, like, it's... His last words were to the prison psychiatrist, because he was led to the guillotine by the prison psychiatrist and a priest.
Okay.
And he looked at the prison psychiatrist and asked him if he would at least be able to hear the sound of his blood spilling after his head had been chopped off.
Oh.
Because he was hoping to, even in death, achieve ejaculation.
Gross.
How fucked up is that? Yeah. The psychiatrist simply said no and they cut his fucking head off.
Yeah. Ugh.
Thank the fuck Christ.
Yeah.
Unlike gross. Your guy who lived peacefully.
A long, happy life.
Yeah. Murdering just, and attempted murdering and
yeah.
Or raping, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And
he had attempted murders too.
So. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I forgot he didn't kill all of his women with
yeah.
the alcohol. Yeah. But yeah, I'm glad they finally caught my guy and
he yeah.
died a gruesome death because he deserved to die.
So much more than that.
Yeah. He deserved to die in a worse way, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, those were two fucked up guys.
Yeah, I know. Today was a very dark day.
Yeah, I agree. But
I'm glad fun.
We covered them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean.
And I'll add to the end of this who the guy is with his head in a museum.
Sweet. Okay, that sounds good. Yeah,
I'll figure it out and then add it.
Okay, cool.
Sounds good. You can follow us on Instagram at Baked Potato Podcast, and you can email us at bakedpotatopodcast@gmail.com. Do you have anything else, Perry?
I don't think so. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it.
Me too. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Well, no, we won't.
We'll.
You'll hear us, but we'll talk to you next time.
We'll talk to you next time.
So, the mummified head in the museum is indeed Peter Curtin's head.
I can't believe that I missed such a big detail.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know, like, what I read, like, I never read anything about that. That's
yeah.
insane.
What about him drinking the victim's blood?
They didn't state anything about that either, so I don't even know why they called him the victim of Dusseldorf. Or vampire. Vampire.
Ooh, vampire, yeah.
I guess just because he slit their throats?
Maybe.
I don't know. I mean, that kind of makes sense, but like you said, like maybe?
Yeah. I don't know. But his head's in a museum. So you can Google that and see what it looks like.
And it's very interesting.
Yes.
It's gruesome.
It is.
Just like our story.
Yes. Bye-bye.